once again we caution you, these stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
Excuse me, sir?
Yes?
Well, I'm a young filmmaker and a real big fan. I just wanted to meet you.
My pleasure. I'm Orson Welles.
I'm Edward D. Wood, Jr. What you working on?
Well, the financing just fell through for the third time on Don Quixote.
Do you know, I can't believe it. That sounds just exactly like my problems.
It's the damn money, men. You never know who's a windbag and who's got the goods. And then they all think they're directors.
Ain't that the truth? Do you know that I've even had producers recut my movies?
I hate when that happens.
And they're always trying to cast their buddies. It doesn't even matter if they're right for the part.
Tell me about it. I'm supposed to do a thriller at Universal. But they want Charlton Heston to play a Mexican.
Ah, Mr. Welles, is it all worth it?
It is when it works. You know, the one film of mine where I had total control, Kane. The studio hated it, but they didn't get to touch a frame. Ed.
Yes?
Visions are worth fighting for. Why spend your life making someone else's dreams?
Podcast. I'm Tom Carnell.
I'm Heather Buckley.
And I'm Langley West.
And today for episode 90, we have a couple of special guests. Like that? That was like
a
Italian.
Special guest.
Special guest. In the body of Tino Zamora, who is a producer of an upcoming film called Lake of Shadows, The Legend of Avocado Lake. Welcome, Tino.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tino is a producer out of Central California? Fresno, California.
Central California.
Where is Fresno?
Like Central California.
Central California.
Valley.
Okay.
Yeah, we're about 300 miles in each direction of San Francisco and LA. So we're right in the middle.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's how you go to all those cons, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. So give us a sketch of the film. And I know that you guys have a Kickstarter. We want to talk about that. But give us an idea of the film and how you sort of came about and all of the particulars.
Well, Avocado Lake is actually a real lake about 30 minutes east of Fresno. There's been hundreds of drownings there since I was a kid. You know, there was a big sign at the entrance of the park that tells you pretty much no lifeguard on duty and a number of how many people have drowned there. And I've heard, you know, so many stories over the year, but the one that really got me was when I was about 10, I was told about humongous catfish that are at the bottom of the lake there. And that could be why there's been so many drownings of people getting dragged under by these huge catfish.
Okay.
And the story goes, what we're filming is a documentary, like found footage type of movie.
Okay.
And it's going to be documenting the deaths of all the people that drowned in Avocado Lake.
The people who actually drowned in Avocado Lake or fictional characters?
Well, fictional characters.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
There's too many to go by name.
Dude, giant catfish is no joke.
Have you seen those fucking hillbillies that go out there and, what do they call it?
Well, they call it noodling. But
noodling.
Back home, we called it fish hogging.
What the hell?
White people, man. Dude, what we would do is we would take, you know, the giant milk bottles.
Sure.
You know, the milk cans,
yeah.
You know, like 3-4 feet high.
Yeah.
We take them and we put them down in there, and then the big catfish would go in there
and just pick them up.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's like they're just rumbling around in the mud, and they get these giant fucking monsters.
Dude, they're huge.
Yeah,
they're huge.
So okay. That's a great idea.
Yeah,
and it's based on real legend, so you got that going for you.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you meet up with Michael?
I met Michael about a year ago or so at a free screening for a movie that a friend of ours was throwing on.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started talking, became friends on Facebook, and then last June, he gave me a call and said, you know, I need a place to shoot my latest movie, Love Starve, coming out next year. And he goes, I need a place to shoot it. The guy who I was going to shoot it, you know, he canceled on me. So I said, sure, you know, you can shoot it here. So it took 2 days, and he shot his short movie here in my living room. So when it comes out, Love Starved, starring Felissa Rose of Sleepaway Camp.
Mm-hmm. She's attached to your new project, right?
Yes, she actually offered, you know, if you'd like me to be in it. It's like, we couldn't jump at it fast enough. Like, yes, sure, you know. So pretty much the whole cast of Love Starve came back, you know, to do this film, along with a few others that we picked up along the way. Alyssa Dowling, Robert Lasardo, Don Wildsmith, Jared Michael Diego, Michael Wainwright, Sherry Davis, Tiffany Brooke Fest, Sarah French, Melantha Blackthorn, and, you know, it just goes on and on, you know, just you couldn't believe how many people wanted to be part of this.
Say that again, Heather.
I love Alyssa Dowling. I work with her, and We Are Still Here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's so fun and cool and awesome. Big fan.
Right on.
I worked once before, too, with Sean Lewis on There Goes the Neighborhood.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so you're kind of have a relationship with past guest Sean Lewis.
Yes.
Yeah, you've known. I've known Sean forever, as I imagine you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sean's a good guy. that new comic is doing gangbusters, man.
Yeah. It is.
Really, really well. So how did you, when you got your cast together, it's kind of populated by familiar faces if you do a lot of cons. And I don't mean that disparagingly. It's like one of the great things about media conventions and genre cons is that it gives filmmakers access to this kind of this level of acting talent, where they otherwise wouldn't be able to get to them. So it's interesting to me that on a lot of low budget horror films, you're seeing like, hey, look, there's Bill Moseley, and hey, look, there's Sid Haig, and they're in an awful lot of this stuff.
Right. Well, and that's fantastic, because if you don't have access to folks like that, and if folks aren't willing to do these types of projects, when you have a budget that's when you have a tiny budget, then you're relegated to using friends.
Right.
And and it's nice to get a name.
Right. The name, I mean, like, I was talking to Moseley once, and he was saying that, like, he'll come down for the day, film whatever you need to do, here's the sides, he films whatever you want to do, you give him his check, and he leaves.
Yeah.
You know, Sid Haig does the same thing. But it's, what's interesting is that it's also spawned a level of actor that are what I'm going to call super fans, they're super fans to the point that they've got no filmmakers, and they've been involved in projects, even peripherally, and the next thing you know, they're in front of the camera, and the next thing you know, they're like...
Right.
A whole new career blossom.
Yeah.
So that's great. Tell me about the Kickstarter.
Well, the Kickstarter at this point right now, we're up to $2,200. We have to raise the $6,500 by September 25th, 2016, which is a day after my birthday. So if you guys want to get me something for my birthday, a couple of things would be nice. So,
well, that's fair though. You've got what, a month to go. You're a third of the way there.
Yes.
You're not asking for the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like sometimes
yeah.
people go bananas on those Kickstarter things.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just working on a very modest budget, $6,500. You know, that's all I'm asking for, just to, you know, just to pay the cast, take care of their lodging, meals, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully we can get that goal before then.
Yeah. That's beautiful that, you know, it's like really kind of that level of filmmaking of like, let's put on a show. Right?
I know. Yeah. And that's one of my favorite, I don't know, for lack of a better word, kinds of filmmaking. It's just people involved for the sheer love of let's do this. We've got this story. There's nothing stopping us now because we have access to the technology.
Well, shit, half, I would say at least 3/4 of Takashi Miike's Yakuza films were shot that way.
Sure.
Like, hey, I got a bunch of black suits and white shirts and some guns. Yeah.
Who was
yeah.
the French director who said all you need for a good movie is a girl and a gun?
Sure.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I want to say yeah. I'm going to say either like Melville or someone like
somebody.
That.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. So the Kickstarter's going well, and you got a month to go, and that's good. Now's the time. Man, Kickstarter's what people think it's a license to print money, and it's so much fucking work. We've talked about it, I'm sure, on the show before.
Hey, before we get too far in, so for folks listening, who we were talking about Michael and how you hooked up with Michael. Who is Michael?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Michael S. Rodriguez. He is a small town boy. He lives about 20 minutes away in a little town called Kerman, California. You know, he does these movies on the side. You know, he actually does have a regular 9-to-5 job, just like myself. And he's just brilliant. You know, just all of his... He's made a few movies before, Night of the Sea Monkey. that one's a really good one, by the way. Homewrecked, which is coming out pretty soon, that he shot with James Van Beber.
Oh, and, really? That must yes. have been a hoot. Van Beber is, you yeah. know, pardon my elucidation, but bananas. I love
you know, interviewed him once, and he gave me a very nice interview.
Did he?
He did, yeah. I believe it's a Dread Central interview around Gator Green.
I followed him. I follow him on Facebook.
And, as do I.
Holy mackerel. It's something. He's something. That guy's something, man. Talk about A, not giving a shit, and B, just doing it. You yeah. know, talk about that level of filmmaking.
Where, Tino, where are Michael's films? Like, if somebody wants to see either of those films, where might they go?
He actually has them for sale. I don't have his website on hand. That's, you know, hoping he would go ahead and give me that info if he was here. So I was leaving that for him.
He's 20 minutes away.
So,
but I'm sure through his website and through the Google.
Yes.
When he gets here, he's going to get here in a minute, or we're going to talk way shit about him. And we'll ask him then, and we'll get his name. So I particularly wanted to bring you guys on because the idea of low budget filmmaking, like this is as micro budget as it gets. I mean, you're making a film, an entire film on the budget less than most features pay on catering, I would venture to guess.
Yes.
I mean, and so you're stretching a dollar pretty goddamn far.
Oh boy, are we!
with that said, we're kind of using this as a diving board to jump in to talk about micro budget filmmaking. Without giving away too much, how much of this is going to be self funded? Do you think?
I'm going to say probably about more than half.
Sure. Mm.
So, you know, it's like we can't depend on Kickstarter alone.
Right.
You know? So, you know, here and there, I pick up a few things here and there that we might need. And it's like, okay, I'll just save this for later, you know.
What's smart is by setting the Kickstarter goal where you have, it's out of the box, totally within reach.
Right. It's yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Either way, this film's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to. And it's going to happen.
Listen to that conviction.
Oh yeah, I'm confident.
Well,
when I say that.
What attracts you to making film? It's the idea that because low budget filmmaking is sort of making film at any cost, because you have to do whatever you can to manifest that project. You can't solve things with money. We can't get a lot of people. And yet it happens anyway, and it happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. We have some that we just kept quiet about that we shot already. Mm-hmm. But we just want to keep going until, you know, it's like, okay, let's release just a little tidbit here and there.
I've seen a lot of low-budget filmmakers, that same look that you see in the photographer in Fear and Loathing, that total coverage. That's total wide-eyed, like, we're going to keep shooting no matter what. Yeah, yeah. That's so awesome.
I think as a low-budget filmmaker, you have to be a little fanatical. Because if you're not, it's too easy to say this is too hard mm-hmm. and stop doing it. So you have to have that conviction. You have to, it's like, dude, we're going to do this.
Right.
Like Tino said.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like you've already jumped and you really do have to build your wings on the way down. You know,
yeah.
Because, you know, you get to the location and the generator doesn't show or, you know, whatever. You're improvising. The effect doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah. But let's go back to that, to Heather's question. I like that. The idea of at what point do you go, I believe in this enough that I'm going to invest not only my time, but my money and my resources.
Why make low budget independent film? What is the decision to go, we're making this, we're doing this. I'm killing myself over this story and getting it done.
Just the passion. Just, I wanted to do this. When he approached me with it, you know, you want to make this movie with me? I couldn't say yes fast enough. It's just like, yeah, I'm all in.
Right on.
I just want to tell this story. I want to get it made. And you know what? We are going to do this. Like, I've got my doubters and some saying, oh, you're wasting your time. But you know what? I don't have time for that.
Right, right. There are always people that are going to be there to do that. You know.
But that's always at every level, I feel, in the art world. Because I think a lot of people's job in the art world is to make sure other people don't make art.
Right.
That's true. It's their very existence.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, so many times, I'll tell you, you know, personally, that I'll have, in talking with friends, I'll go, hey, I've got this great idea. And this is just for pros. And it's, they don't mean to, but they kind of look at you like, that sounds bananas and that sounds like a lot of work. And why would you do that? And it's like, no, I don't need that from you. What I need that from you is awesome.
Right.
You should totally do it. But those people are hard to come by, you know,
the people that are like
supportive of it.
You know what? At the end of the day, you know, hopefully we all either go out in a blaze of glory or we have the luxury of having a deathbed. But when at the end of the day, it's going to be so much better to say, I did this.
Mm-hmm.
I did this and
what's
I did
the,
this.
I can't believe I'm quoting this, but what's the Butthole Surfer's lyric about it's better to regret something you've done than something you
absolutely.
Haven't done?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rather than sit around saying, I wish I had done this. I wish. What if?
Well, everyone has that, you know, the old adage about the great American novel. You know, everyone has that one tale that really resonates with them.
Right.
You know? And I think it's a testament to someone's fandom and their willingness to throw the dice. Yeah.
Yeah.
To go, yeah, sure. Because once getting the film made or writing the book or drawing the piece or whatever is half the battle. Because then you've now opened a vein onto your canvas or your page and then you present it to the world. In the world, it's so easy for people, especially in the days of the internet, just to go, eh, it was okay, or kind of shit on your dream kind of a thing. But man, you, at the very end of the day, there's that piece in your hand, and you at least give it a shot, right?
Well, I mean, I don't give a shit about what other people say about my shit.
Right.
I'm doing it for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so your audience never comes to mind when you create art,
this conversation. No, I don't care what the audience. Yeah. I don't care about them. Yeah. I care about satisfying the fire.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. That's why I'm going to be relegated to making low budget shit because I'm never going to be able to you know, go, hey, this is what the kids want.
I think it's caring about your audience, because I mean, there's people that are attracted to your work and people who are looking for those type of stories, and that's who your audience is. I mean, even David Cronenberg said that. He said he writes for his best and perfect audience, the people who will understand the work and appreciate the work.
That
is your audience. That is like Langley's audience, which would be different, like you as a stop motion guy, than someone else. Than someone else who does stop motion, because your styles and your stories are different.
Yeah, it's, and I agree with Mr. Cronenberg's statement. It's just that my best audience is me.
Yeah, I think it's
there's no other little Langleys out there.
Well, they,
no Langley.
I've met a little Langley, and he hit me with a stick.
That sounds like a Langley, though. That does sound like one.
So, I realize what I'm saying kind of sounds dickish.
No.
What I mean is, if I satisfy me, then I know there's going to be people who like it.
Yeah. I feel that your audience must be brought into consideration within the parameter of, is this overall something that might appeal to someone? Because at the end of the day, you would like someone to buy it. But once you're into that arena, now then I think you have to only satisfy yourself.
Yeah.
I will write something that I think that idea is going to make someone snicker or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And from that moment on, okay, that's the concession I make to my audience, that I'm going to try to make it something that you're going to like. Trust me, even if it's a story about fucking frogs, which is in the new book, I'm going to try to make that as best as I can for you. But within that, I can have you involved during the creation process.
Right.
You will have your time to judge it after the fact. But during the creation process, it's got to be all me.
Right. Tino, do you want to tell stories for yourself, or are you wanting to tell stories for someone else?
I'd say just for myself, you know, because around here in the town that I grew up in, Parlier, which is a little closer to where Avocado Lake is, there's a pretty good size buzz going on about an Avocado Lake movie. A lot of people are interested in it to see it, but, you know, they're not pledging to Kickstarter to get it going, you know, because when I go back to my hometown, I run into people I know when I go to visit my mom, who still lives out there. And it's like, hey, when is that movie coming out? And I said, well, did you pledge? Like, well, no. It's like, well, then, you know, how are we going to make the movie if you don't pledge?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I'm mostly doing it for myself, was what I'm trying to say. But there's also a lot of people that want to see it, done.
There's a huge, this befuddles me, but there's a huge audience for this kind of, not that I take the befuddled line back, but the idea is that there's this huge fan of people who are really sort of reveling in the low budget cinema. You know, there's like a bunch of people I know in Olympia that really, they just love that stuff. And
it's a whole separate market. I mean, we've talked about in the past how more and more movies are kind of widening, right? So we have like the huge Hollywood tentpole block, you know, that they're hoping is a blockbuster, mm-hmm. you know, that's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And then there's more and more movies where people are making movies for $10,000 and under,
mm-hmm.
and the middle movie, or even $1 million and under, because $1 million movie anymore is a tiny movie.
Yeah.
And that there's less and less of the kind of middle ground budget movie. And it kind of makes sense, because with the advent of technology, with the ability to go out and shoot something that looks on par with something that Hollywood did, as far as you know, the equipment you're using and stuff like that. Sure, why not make, you know, I mean, if it's only going to cost me $5 to make a movie.
Yeah. Well, it's then, like Romero said, like, what would you do with $20 million?
Exactly.
To make 10 $2 million movies.
Right.
And especially now, when Park Chan-wook shot a film entirely on his iPhone.
Right.
I just saw a horror film recently that, and this sounds like a joke, but it was shot entirely on the backup camera of an automobile. You know how when you hit it in reverse, the camera lights up? They were filming that. They had patched in and they filmed the entire movie using that camera.
Yeah.
So with the democratization of the technology, yeah, anybody can make a movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Look at
the feedback from a lot of the gatekeepers that not everybody should be making movies.
Well, that's what I've always said.
Numerous times. And I think that if anyone's a gatekeeper saying that, I think it's a dangerous thing to say about any kind of art. Because who's the taste holders? Who's making those rules? Why have they been appointed? A lot of questions go up why anyone would say that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I do think that it's like what I say about the great thing is that anyone can make a movie, but the bad thing is that anyone can make a movie.
Well, but having said that, even really bad things that I've seen,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I still, you know, always will be like, fuck yeah, you know, kudos to you, because it's making
together.
A movie is fucking hard.
It is hard.
And so that's why I told you I can't be a reviewer, because no matter what it is, I look at it and I go, hey,
you get a couple of stars just for making it. Yeah. Yeah.
Damn straight.
Yeah.
Making movies is magic. It's the best job there ever is.
I've seen on your timeline on Facebook, Tino, there are pictures of you guys, and you're out there in like rubber wraps and stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's as bare bones as it gets.
Yeah. We shot that promo about 2 weeks ago, you know, just, begging everybody for pledges on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
So just an idea we had, we went to go scout the area and I just said, hey, why don't we just shoot a promo out here and we can post it on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, see what happens. And we got a good response, you know, a couple of people pledged due to that.
People they love that stuff. That I see that a lot now, and I've talked about my feelings about Patreon in the past, but now I'd be honest, my feelings on Patreon are changing.
Sure.
Because people are, they're getting bang for their buck. They're getting Patreon-only content. They're getting full episodes of podcasts, let's say, that you only get if you pledge $5 a month.
They're getting something for their
yeah, it's not just some big benefactor.
Yeah. So you know, the folks that you were talking about that are part of your cast, you know, Alyssa Rose, Robert Lissardo, so on and so forth. Who don't know, you know, we're not. You may not recognize their name, but you know, we're talking about folks that are from, you know, modern day horror classics like Sleepaway Camp. We're talking about folks from Human Centipede 3. We're talking about folks from 300, Rise of an Empire, Death House, Surf Nazis Must Die. So we touched briefly on it, but do you, in your opinion, do folks get involved in a movie like this, where, you know, they're not making much money? Why, in your opinion, do these folks get involved with a film like this?
I'd have to say through word of mouth. Felissa Rose and Tiffany Brooke Fest and Marv, I'm going to butcher his last name because I really can't pronounce his last name. Baluvelt, I believe his last name is pronounced. Belvelt, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Psycho Street and Death House. He's getting closer.
Yes, and Snake with a Human Tail.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they came through to shoot Love Starved, they were here at my home, and I treated them as well as I could. You know, I made sure that they had everything they needed, and that just made them so happy. They were just so comfortable around us that now if we were to ask them, could you, like, I don't know, shoot a commercial for us, and they would jump at the opportunity to work with us again. And they pretty much a lot of the cast they're all like a tight group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just willing to come and just be part of it. just to help out. And, you know, we're grateful to them for that.
Yeah. I remember someone on a movie set telling me once, like, you know what? Feed your people well and they'll love you forever.
You know, which is true.
Yeah. When you're out in the middle of nowhere and someone, I remember on a movie, they were pulling like a little red wagon and they had hot sandwiches in there. And man, it was like the second coming of Jesus when they would show up.
The beauty of shooting Love Starved here at my home is that I had my barbecue grill out in the backyard, and we just got a big giant tri-tip and I cooked it for a few hours and served it up later, and everybody ate and everybody was happy. And not to mention, I make a pretty good tri-tip.
I'm ready to sign on for your next production at that point. Damn. I know my wife's in the other room making some pork belly, and the whole house. Oh. It's fucking amazing. Yeah, and that's one of those things. It's that intangible reward thing again that we've talked about before, where it's like, you know, I'm not going to make a lot of money on this, but it's going to be a good experience. It's going to help me. It's going to give me time in the chair, so to speak. And it's going to, in the end, at the very least, give me another IMDb credit, which is
sure.
But is that also the thought? Is that the idea of people staying at the micro-budget level and not graduating, or is that even an idea to graduate? Is the sort of DIY family community making of these low-budget films what attracts folks? Yeah, because you could make a million-dollar movie, you're still not going to make any money even at that budget.
Look at people like Fred Vogel. You know, that guy does what he does, and he has his audience that loves him for it, and he's comfortable. He's shooting a new movie now, I hear.
Heather, would it be fair to say that a lot of times folks will get involved, as folks, industry folks, will get involved with films like this because they relish, it's a return for them back to a happier time, or at least a less stressful time when they were getting together with your friends and your family and just making the damn movie and not having to worry about...
Yes, because there's no corporate stakes in making a movie like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You can just have fun, build a community, make whatever you want, and you don't even have to worry about distribution. You can go, I'm just going to make this, we're going to have fun. It's about the process. You can just put it on YouTube if you want, or stream it somewhere, or just show it to your friends. It's like, this is what we made. And I think there's great freedom in staying at that budget level. And it's almost like you're creating they're more, it's like art. It's more like drawing, painting, sculpting.
And again, look at people like, his name's escaping me, the guy that did Mull the Zombie Ass Kicker. Anyway, he's perfectly happy. He makes his goofball comedies, and they're like comedy horror films.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets them on a Netflix. Yeah, I'm hopeful that he doesn't lose his ass on them. But, you know, and another thing that comes to mind is it's very much that ethic that is behind Bleeding Him. The
sure.
idea of let's make a movie, A, and B, you guys as organizers periodically will make short films to promote Bleeding Him. But,
sure.
But they're every bit as stringent and as challenging to pull together as a regular short film.
Yeah.
You know,
Tino, tell me if this has been your experience with the projects that you've been involved with. Actually making the thing, you know, I don't want to make it sound like it's just a party. It's hard. It's difficult. It's stressful. But when you see it, when you see, you know, it's like, damn, that did come out the way I wanted it to. Is that or is that not the drug that keeps you coming back?
Most definitely. Most definitely. It's like, you know, this is my first time having, you know, producing a film. I've been involved with a few just as an extra or, you know, just have a small acting part. But being behind it and just, you know, directing people, helping Michael direct people. And, you know, it's I think it's pretty much my new drug. So
there we go.
And it's just amazing. amazing just to see rough cuts of what's going on. It's like, I can't wait to see this when it's finally edited together and, you know, ready to go. Mm-hmm. It just gets me, what's the word? Gets me hard. There you go. Can I say hard? I'm sorry.
Yeah. You just did.
Okay.
Hey, okay. One of the things I noticed in your cast list is a gentleman named Cesar Ramos Zamora. How did that guy get cast?
Oh, Caesar?
Yeah, that's your son, Caesar. Right?
Yes. And
that's awesome.
He kind of knows me, so I put him in the film. You know?
Hey, he gets an introducing thing on the Kickstarter. It's like, an introducing.
Yes. Awesome.
How old is he?
He's 25.
Wow, you're how old a guy are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 45.
There you go.
Dude, this is the perfect age. Yeah. You know, like, I used to, like, kick myself. It's like, oh, I wish I had started this when I was younger. And I'm like, no, because now you've got, like, 20 years of built-up passion, and you're just like, yes, this is, like, I'm going to fucking do this.
Yeah,
exactly. When my dad took me to go see the Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the drive-in, you know, when I was a kid, you know, it scared the shit out of me, but at the same time, it just was like, wow, I couldn't get enough. You know, it just went from there, just watching different horror movies and like all the classics now. And pretty much I saw, you know, first run, and Caesar always makes fun of me and says, damn, you were there? I'm like, yeah, I was there.
Fucking you know,
right. So, and being, when I was a kid also, we used to reenact scenes like, okay, I'm going to do this and this, and, you know, you do this. And then when we got a video camera, forget it. It was over. You know, I just kept messing with the video camera, making squibs out of ketchup packs, you know, and, you know, just, you know, whatever I could do. And then I had a long break from it. And then when I met Michael, that's when it just started to brew again. Like, okay, this is awesome. I need to follow this dream. You know, I let it go for a while, you know, but now I have to do this now.
One of the great things, I think, great sidebar things about having kids is getting to strap them into a chair Clockwork Orange style and make them watch certain things. My poor kids, man. Repeatedly, I used to make him go, no, you need to watch this, but I don't like it. No, you need to watch this. That's awesome. And then when they get to that age where they're able to actually join in on the passion,
sure.
Even better.
I'm really lucky that Langley comes, like, you know, he comes and spends the summer, and one of the first things he does is he hits up the movie collection, picks out a stack.
Yeah.
You know, and every year the stack gets better. Like, his choices are like, on point. And then he has the ones that are like the return movies that he'll watch every year.
Mm-hmm.
Taxi Driver, you know. Wow. that's his favorite movie of all time. Oh god, yeah, he's a,
it should be most people's favorite movie,
right?
I don't have any children's in the house, so I have my group of friends who are always wanting to know what to watch and what to rent and what disturbing films I have over my house that they're excited to see.
Okay, so I think the big question for me, because I'm an effects guy, is what are you thinking about? What are you thinking about, without tipping your hat too much or revealing too much, just let me know this. Are we going to see a giant catfish?
Well, I can't say too much.
Damn!
So I will just leave that open.
All right. I get it.
See, because I was kind of thinking like, yeah, man, like Humanoids from the Deep or something like that would be badass. But that's awesome. Are there effects in the film, though?
There's a good question.
Yes, we'll be using practical effects.
Yes.
Sweet.
So, you know, we don't really believe in CGI, but if we have to go that route for some reason, then it'll be very minimal. Mm. But we basically just want to use just physical effects.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's what I grew up on and that's what I love. So
sure,
that's what I would want to use.
Right on.
So,
Heather, the what is your experience on this level? I know, like, you've done a lot on what many would call low budget film, but this is like a different animal.
This is micro budget. This is like, yeah.
Micro budget. I've never worked on a micro budget film. They're mostly been at least $1 million. I don't remember Circus of the Dead. I mean, they had a good budget as well. So I've never run and gun it with a camera crew making things in my backyard. Just remember, my background was a traditional artist, a draftsman, and then I went to design and advertising. That was most of my life. So the idea of just making films in my backyard is not really my history, though I was a very big fan, just because I was able to express my narrative tendencies through art, through visual art, and short stories and such.
Uh-huh.
Well, don't have any experience doing micro-budget stuff.
It's amazing to me. I can remember being, like, on AVPR, and there was... It's just, all you can look around is just see is hemorrhaging money.
Right.
And you think, man, you know.
They need to put the JKD screws to it. And
right.
Like make it more economical.
Yeah. Because I just, you just see that kind of waste and that kind of indulgence. And you just think, man, that money could be spent better places. And with the resulting film that AVPR was, I was right.
Yeah. Well, I've worked on some negative budget films.
There you go.
Where
you pay to be there.
Yeah, it's like it's actually the budget is a negative X amount of dollars. I remember the first time I worked on a $10,000 budgeted film, and I thought, oh shit,
oh, yeah.
We can fucking make the Titanic for this, man. It's like it was.
And we're building our own facility in Mexico.
That's right.
Half that budget.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's great because when you're working at that level, it really does force your hand to be more creative. And I think a lot of times the result is a lot more interesting than if you had been able to afford, you know, this or that. You know, I mean, we see examples all the time in Hollywood where because of the budget or because something didn't work, you actually wind up with a better, more interesting film. You know, The Shark in Jaws is always the classic example.
Yeah, I would reference even last episode, Steve Johnson talking about going to Rio.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking that he was going to do an out-of-the-kit makeup and finding it was much
finding more. it was like, oh, shit. Yeah.
How many times does that happen?
Yeah.
Where you realize,
I think you learn a different way of problem solving in low budget films because you can't use money to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think having that skill set, and sort of you move up the ladder to bigger budget films, you have this entire skill set of how to solve things, feed people, create a good goodwill on the set in much more difficult shooting situations. And I think
I
it
agree.
Only is helpful as you move forward. Also in any stage of life, it's good to have those skills. It's like, well, I need 4 locations, 7 locations in the film. What locations do I use? And I'm not spending thousands of dollars to get that done. Do I think about where my parents are? I mean, that's, though a bigger budget, that's how Blue Ruin was made. They just thought, like, what do we have already that we can bridge and write to?
Well, I've said that forever. I think I said it back on the Bleeding Ham show about how, give me 4 locations that you have access, unlimited access to, and we'll figure something out.
I mean, that's the formula that Rodriguez has always put forward, right? It's like, don't think about what you want. Think about what you have.
I recently just read someone's script, and it was like, you know, we open on an arena of people. It's like, well, no, we don't. Because you don't got that. I mean, we can give you that, but it's going to be your entire budget, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's being able to that's why you see so many low budget slasher movies, because the narrative's fairly simple and you just have to.
And zombie films, it's like slasher zombie films.
Yeah, zombie films especially.
But this movie is about fucking giant catfish, and that is badass.
Yeah.
They're next monster. Eat people.
Tito.
Yes.
There are no zombies in this, right?
No zombies.
Yes. Catfish.
No, stop it.
With lasers on their
heads. Zombievers.
Catfish with lasers.
Yeah.
With freaking lasers on their heads.
Yeah. Did you see Zombievers?
No, I didn't see Zombievers.
People have been charmed by that film.
It's really dumb. But Bill Burr is in it with John Mayer in this ridiculous makeup. There's a beginning section of these two guys talking in a truck.
Yeah.
It's like you don't even recognize John Mayer, and it's kind of funny. You know, it's one of those things. It's like Piranha 3D. It's
sure. No, I get it. And sometimes
I think the first Catfish movie, the next one has to fly like Piranha 2.
Oh my God! It's just like a jet, because you know the cool thing about Catfish is that they're basically a giant head.
I never thought I'd hear that on the show. The cool thing about Catfish
is they're basically a giant mouth, right? That's what their head is, like this big shovel with like a mouth, kind of like a shark, and then everything just trails back from there, right?
Sure.
So, fucking Catfish Monster.
Yeah.
That's a fucking cool idea, man. I mean, like, I want to sculpt shit now because, like, I'm thinking.
Tina's all, how much do you rate? You're going to do that for free? We can use that.
Really, man? Hey, let's talk.
Yeah. Oh, dude, Langley does some banging shit. His stuff is nice.
Langley
can serve some catfish up for you. He can serve it.
I feel like going to Avocado Lake and going fishing. Cash.
Right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So yeah, I think that on one hand, it's, I'm going to back off that. Do you guys have anything lined up as far as distribution of this thing? Or are you just going to go the way that Michael's other films have gone?
Yeah. Well, more than likely the way that Michael distributes his films. I really can't talk about that too much right now, but,
you know, I'm just curious. I don't even know what kind of deal. Does anyone here, I mean, the kind of deal Netflix gives to low-budget films?
Netflix gives you a shitty deal.
But it puts your shit in front of people's
eyes.
Sure,
it puts your shit in front of people's eyes. But now, and a few years ago, I would say that that might be worth it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chillerama. Oof. Chillerama, yeah, I know, right? But, you know, they fucking made it. So, Chillerama. Thought that it was a good thing that their movie got put onto Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really. You can make more money selling your discs out of the back of your car or at cons or on a website than you will through Netflix. Netflix gives you a shitty distribution deal.
Right.
And I'm not dissing Netflix. I enjoy the access that they give me to stuff. But... this is my two cents. For a filmmaker who's trying to get their shit out, there are much better avenues to go.
Well, look at someone I hope you get on the show at some point. Art Fisher has American Horrors on Filmon. That's an entire horror film network streaming through your internet,
mm-hmm.
and he plays like deep cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like he isn't fucking around with your pandering shit.
Sure,
it's
sure.
Like really, really deep stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there are more models.
And the great thing now is that there are so many different distribution opportunities, I guess, mm-hmm. than there has been in the past. I mean, you know, back in the day, you either sold your movie,
mm-hmm.
or never saw the light of day.
Well, I mean, look at stuff like Screambox,
mm-hmm.
is one of those things. There's a streaming network.
Shudder.
What's that?
Shudder,
yeah.
I remember back in the day when a lot of these low-budget films were made, you could sell units of VHS to Blockbuster.
Sure.
That does not exist anymore. So while people can buy your movies, it's more like sort of a mom and pop sort of thing. Because it's true. It's like out of your back of cars, at conventions.
Right.
There's no way for you to really get the reach unless you get to someplace that is sort of like on Xbox, on Netflix. I think, though, if you're a smart person, I think that you can manage those deals yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, somebody... one thing that seems to work well is if you make a really good quality product and you hit the festival circuit. If you can afford to hit the festival circuit and rack up some awards and make a lot of noise and you know, kind of beat your chest a little bit. And mm-hmm. Kevin McTurk's The Mill at Calder's End is a good example of that. You know, keeping in mind, Kevin McTurk has worked on some of the best effects films, but you know, he did this one thing on his own, and now he's carted all around, and it's won all these awards, and now it's kind of a feather in somebody's cap if they get.
But I would have to say that's like a high art, high concept film. I think for Giant Killer Catfish, you might be able to want to look like my friend Tim Reese's movie Bad Blood about mutant frog people. And even a mutant frog person film, because it's very well made, it's very fun and very well art directed, it got a festival run. So it doesn't mean that you need to be fancy with two E's. You can be a rubber monster movie.
Absolutely.
A giant catfish.
Absolutely. I think that you, basically, you are your own captain as far as marketing goes now.
But isn't that something that's happening, like, not just in film?
It's like in everything.
Everyone, you have to be your own best advocate.
Absolutely.
I know entire deals for writers that it's like, oh, we'll put your stuff out, but promotion is your problem.
Right, exactly.
And we're going to expend very little energy to that end.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah. We have an announcement today, later on, that pertains to getting your product out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So that's cool.
So we're coming up here. I'm just curious, what is our takeaway other than let's get this film fucking made on this? I embrace, sometimes micro budgeted films could be really a tough road to hoe, but I embrace the idea of like, yeah, you know what? Art is something anyone can make and anyone can fund and
art should be something everyone should make is actually how I would critique that slightly. How you're saying.
Agreed. Like
everyone should make it, and micro budget film is an opportunity to express narrative in a form that just combines music, acting, visual, narrative.
It's my head tether. She brings it all right to the diamond point.
I would say this. That god damn it. Make fucking cool shit.
Yeah.
Make cool. Don't sit around and talk about making cool shit. Don't think about making cool shit. Make cool shit.
And, I see it so
and
much.
And just go.
People on Facebook just talking shit and about this and this and this and this and this. And then you go, well, where's yours?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't do that shit. Okay.
Then shut up.
Yeah.
And half of
online journalism is full of failed filmmakers who just want to bitch.
Absolutely. Look, it's like, fucking support art.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah, you have to. Support art, support artists. That's how we keep, we've talked a million times about the spirit of independent filmmaking and how vitally important it is to be a counterbalance to the spoon-fed crap that Hollywood routinely dishes out. This is, projects like Tino's are the only way that you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact, you know, like I meet filmmakers that they love the genre, but they have a limited scope. Now here you have someone like Tino and Michael who are, I know Tino's viewing habits, you know, it's deep cuts. Again, it's deep stuff. And it's like, so who do you want to see your horror from? Someone who has a wide palette from which to choose, or some, you know, some USC graduate who may not.
I want to see everybody's horror.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we might want to claim on this show, is that as legitimate as all these crazy films are, so is the micro budget. Yeah. So it was a small, intimate cast and someone doing something that they love. And I think that's important to talk about.
Tino?
Yes, sir.
Why do you want to make this movie, man? This is your shot. This is your time to sell this movie to the people who are listening, why they should give you money.
Why they should give me money? Because this is a story that I want to tell. I'm following a dream. This is just something that I've always wanted to do. And I'm very passionate about it, and I'm very excited to work with all these celebrities that we have in this cast. Michael is just an awesome director. He's very creative, and I know he can put this story together to where I'm comfortable with it, and he's comfortable with it as well. And it's just a big dream from a small town Mexican kid who is a big horror fan. So if you can pledge now. Your ATM, credit card, ABT card won't be charged till September 25th, 2016. So help a Mexican kid get his dream and have it come true.
When did this it's a make-a-wish kid thing.
Diversity is important in the genre, and it was very cool to see the cast is diverse and has diverse people behind the camera. You know that's difficult.
Yeah, I totally agree on that one. You know, because, and I think we're at a point now where, remember when, like, Tales from the Hood came out? They're like, oh, it's a black horror film. It's like, why can't it just be a horror film?
Right.
And I think we're kind of there. We're near there.
Yeah.
Now that racism is over.
Is it really?
That's what I heard. I heard on the TV that it's all over.
Nobody told me.
I know, right? I think I agree with you, Heather, wholeheartedly. Diversity is important. You know, that's why I think it's so important to... Even like, you know what, going in, it's going to be bad. To watch, for example, Nigerian cinema, all of that stuff is horrendously bad. But it deserves to be seen, and it deserves its audience, which, oddly enough, it has. So, so Kickstarter, they go to Kickstarter, they can type in...
Lake of Shadows.
Lake of Shadows, Legend of Avocado Lake. And just look for us and pledge all you can.
Yep. Go without your latte and give it to these guys because they deserve it.
Yeah.
Winding out. Well, it's unfortunate that Michael wasn't able to make it. That we'll have you guys back at some point, maybe closer to the film's release.
It would be interesting. I would like to revisit, you know, and kind of follow the trajectory of a project.
Yeah.
Through,
you can be our pet project. We'll just follow you.
Sure. You know, feel free to follow me on, you know, on Facebook. Well, I know Tom does. And we'll give you the skinny.
There we go.
Word.
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 Word. to real quickly winding up, to the announcement that we talked about, Bonus Material Podcast is going to be joining the Dread Central Podcast Network.
Woohoo!
So nice. Heather and I, you know, written for Dread Central, and we love... Say that.
I love Dread Central.
There we go.
That was my the first outlet I've ever written for, and I will always love them the best.
Yeah, they're just great. And talk about this very thing that we were talking about with Tino is the idea of they're out there in the trenches, bringing the news to people, bringing
right.
new content, and a lot of times, you know, at very little. Talk about a negative budgeted thing.
Sure.
You know, a lot of times those news sites, some of them can be wildly successful, and Dread Central is, but there's always a little bit of like, when did this take over my life kind of thing.
Right.
And those guys are just awesome. So we're very proud about that.
Yep.
And what that's going to mean to the show is pretty much nothing other than the fact that we'll mention them now and again, and they're going to open this up to their audience.
No, see, I want to do whole skits centered around the fact that we're on Dread Central.
Well, the nice thing is that I've already extended to them, like, if you have people who want to do press, send them our way. So
yeah,
hopefully
absolutely.
it'll increase the number of our guests as well.
Yeah.
So there's that. Does anyone want to have any films they want to talk about?
Oh, fuck, yes.
And I knew that was coming. That we've seen. Let's make Langley wait. No, go ahead.
All right. So this happens like every year or 2 years, whatever it is. All right. Leica comes out with their latest stop motion extravaganza.
Leica being the people who did Coraline and Box Trolls.
Coraline, Box Trolls, Paranorman. Yeah. And
they're awesome.
They're awesome. Like, this is a group of filmmakers in Portland, Oregon, in this giant empty... Well, not empty, but this big warehousey building that are just cranking out these magical, beautiful...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're talking about Kubo, right?
Handcrafted. So this year's offering is Kubo and the Two Strings. Now, their other movies have been of a certain ilk. You know, I don't want to say Tim Burton-ish, but you know, there's kind of this gothy undercurrent to what they've done so far. You know, a little bit of a
shout
horror,
out to the pasty faced welts out there. Go ahead.
They really branched out this time, and it's taking place in this feudal Japan. Well, not feudal. It's like that doesn't even center into it, but
Japan.
I'm going to guess in the 16th, 17th century, something like that.
Sweet.
And it is a visual smorgasbord. And again, you see things that you think are like, well, that's got to be computer generated. Mm-hmm. And you find out, no, they're so imaginative and inventive at putting these images on the screen.
I saw some blurb about some giant.
It has the largest stop motion puppet ever made, a 16 foot tall stop motion puppet. It is so fucking badass.
That's cool. That's very cool. I watched the trailer last night, and I have to admit, everything looked great. I have to admit, my head hit my hand while my guitar gently weeps plays.
While My Guitar Gently Weeps is the closing credits.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's not actually part of the movie.
I kept thinking, oh boy, we're going to do this.
Not part of the movie.
I'm down for that song being played on that instrument. Mm-hmm. So you recommend it.
I highly recommend it. And I don't, and people always, you know, it's probably like, oh yeah, it's got a stop motion, you know, egg in it, you know, or whatever. Right. Langley's gonna love it. No, it's genuinely a fantastic movie. For people who have kids who are thinking about going to see it, keep in mind it's a little slower than some of the other offerings by them. There's more going on in the way of character. Sweet. And stuff like that. It's beautiful.
Yeah, we're gonna go see it. I think on Tuesday.
There's a fight scene in it that is just badass. It's great.
Come on, Heather.
You just did something badass. What was it, Heather?
I interviewed Christopher Lloyd at IFC Center for a film which I think everyone needs to see called I Am Not a Serial Killer.
Sweet.
Which is about a young psychopathic boy who was obsessed with a serial killer in his local town, and sort of how that unfolds with a relationship, the idea of love, the idea of other and supernatural elements, his relationship to his family and his other people. It is a film that's phenomenally amazing, and I cannot think of any genre film coming out in 2016 that will be as good as this film.
Wow.
Because I've never seen anything as good as this film. The last time I liked sort of like an indie genre-esque film was probably Manson Family Vacation. The idea of like a very unique idea, very well acted, very well executed, that's kind of like a hybrid between dark comedy, actual comedy, and genre. And this has sort of like dark comedy, actual comedy, genre, and supernatural. It's so good. Lloyd is amazing, because Lloyd gets to play, well, Lloyd in person, he's very thoughtful to interview and has a lot of great focus on process. But this Lloyd in this film is my, like, I love Judge Doom, probably my favorite Lloyd. But this is like dramatic Lloyd, like in Things to Do in Denver When You Dead, when you see sort of a dramatic Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing a next door neighbor with sort of an interesting past. And he has a great range in this film.
He's one of those people we call movie helper.
Yeah.
You add him to anything and Lloyd's going to be great. That's awesome. And
he really hates the material, but also Max Records, the kid.
Yeah.
He's going to grow up to be as a grown-up actor. I can't see him being one of them. He's such a great kid actor.
Sweet.
Because it's up to him to hold the entire film, because the film's his story.
Mm-hmm.
He's very interesting to watch. And he doesn't, he's no notes or faults are in his performance.
Right on.
And the end of the film is strong. It's very strong.
That's excellent. And you interviewed him for...
I actually interviewed him. I interviewed him because I saw the film at South by Southwest. And then I interviewed the entire cast and crew. And that's actually going to go up on Monday, my entire interview with them. And then I interviewed Lloyd separately. And then I interviewed Lloyd for the Buckaroo Banzai disc over in LA that I produced. And then somehow I was asked by the PR guy, my friend Matt, and he goes, like, do you want to interview Christopher Lloyd on stage live at IFC Center? And of course I love performing. I love interviewing people live, and it just went very, very well.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so awesome.
And it's just an honor to just Christopher Lloyd. When I was 14 years old, I wrote him a fan letter.
Right on. Did you have it?
I don't, because like we had to write it by hand and mail it, because in school they go like, so who is the most famous person you love and care about, and write them a letter. And I, out of everyone in the entire world I could have written a letter to, Christopher Lloyd.
Little Heather Buckley writing a fan letter. I love it. I love that imagery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tino, any films you've seen lately you want to recommend?
One I saw just recently is Up From the Depths. I believe it's an early 80s film about a giant fish.
It's a Roger Corman flick.
Yes,
It's the answer to Jaws.
Right on.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
I've been going through all these, Piranha, Up From the Depths.
Oh,
the what is that movie? The Bermuda Depths, I think it's called.
Huh.
It came out like in the late 70s.
All that brings to mind stuff like, I remember that whole run back in the day of like Deep Star 6, Leviathan. They were all underwater monster movies.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Anything else?
Let me see. What else did I watch? Oh, yeah. Ishtar. Saw that.
Ah. First of all.
Look, wait.
Ishtar. Second of all, you watching Ishtar, I did not see that coming.
No one would ever.
I watch it every year, so.
Yeah. Do you really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, just something I put on and say, oh yeah, this is why I don't watch it.
This guy's working on a movie. He doesn't got time to watch shit. Okay, he's busy.
I love that. Okay, that's fair enough. Ishtar, did you like it? You obviously do.
No.
Oh, you know it's terrible.
Yeah, so I just watch it just to remind myself how much I hate it. So
right,
it's something I've been doing for a couple of years now. So
what, Heather?
I feel the same about Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Oh,
gotta remind
fucking
yourself.
Repo!
Gotta remind yourself.
My hatred of that movie is legendary, but yeah. Oh Jesus, that's a tough one. It's one of those films you watch just to go, well, that got made, you know?
Right.
Yeah. As far as me goes, I'm doing the 366, which continues with films like The Rock, Faster, Lake Mungo, The Ballad of Nariyama, Dario Argento's Giallo. But mostly what I've been watching for this project I'm working on are resource-type stuff. Like, I just watched Abbott Costello Meets Frankenstein and was able to pull the image of a castle out of that. And Tino continues to eat chips. So the idea that watching film to harvest source material for something I'm working on, and I also have fallen in love recently with the idea of monster mash movies, Monster Squad, Abbott Costello Meets Frankenstein, you know, where you've got this gathering of different horror archetypes that are just fun that you don't see anymore, right?
Don't forget about Mad Monster Party.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's kind of what Penny Dreadful's been doing in spades, where it's
right.
Like, we're going to grab every single archetype we can and shoehorn it into a narrative. But they're so much fun and so super cool.
What was the professional wrestling monster movie a couple years
Monster
ago?
Bash.
Yeah, Monster Bash.
That was actually, in a boneheaded way, kind of fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Silly.
I'm trying to remember the guy who was in The Brood, Art Heather.
I can't name anyone who is in The Brood that is not.
He was the husband in The Brood. Anyway, he's in that. Art Hinky or something his name is. But he was in Monster Bash as one of the announcers.
The dude from The Octagon?
Maybe. Probably.
In the 70s, he had kind of the Farrah Fawcett hair.
Yeah, they all had
Farrah. Yeah.
I, in the 80s, had Farrah Fawcett hair. I'll have you know, it's all gone now. But
oh, I've seen the pictures.
Yeah, I know, it's scary. But yeah, it's a cool subgenre that I just, it's one of those things that just recently I started to pine for it, and so I'm doing a lot of that.
Cool.
All right. So again, Kickstarter, Lake of Shadows, pledge your money. Go to Facebook. Other than Langley, well, we're all on Facebook. Langley's not on Twitter, but Heather and I am.
I am, but I don't use it, so.
Yeah.
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah, and the always elusive Tumblr.
Yes, my always elusive Tumblr.
Heather's got the greatest Tumblr ever.
But,
yeah.
Civilians don't really have access to
it. Yeah. No. And we probably shouldn't talk about it, but this is something that we get to see.
My Tumblr is just recycled porn.
Yeah. Like, really? Yeah. I need to get on your Tumblr.
No, you don't.
All right. Yeah, your Tumblr. All right. So, yeah. So next week, we'll be back with something. We're working on some stuff. So, Tino, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And let's do what we can. Let's keep updated on this guy.
Yeah.
And Heather, you're always wonderful. Langley, you're beautiful.
Aww.
Beautiful.
I know, right? So, yeah, do all that. So, we're out of here. So, for the bonus material podcast, part of the Dread Central Podcast Network, I'm Tom Carnell.
I'm Heather Buckley.
And I'm Langley West. Stay scary.